Okay. Hey.
Catch a vibe. We're gonna get you to the other side. Going you way back to the time. Reminisce and relax your mind. And catch a vibe.
Catch a vibe like a throwback. You with the bridge, about to turn it up. Picture perfect, no Kodak. And ain't no holdbacks. We getting real, getting raunchy. We bridge millennials, baby. We keep it saucy.
What's up, homies? Welcome back. I know that you came to this episode because you knew it was going down in the building, okay? We got Shannon Ashley. We got everybody. We got India. She's back again, our herbalist. She gonna be weighing in and telling us about the SIGs. If this is your first time listening, first of all, go listen to the other episodes because we lit. But the Bridge Millennial Podcast is the shared perspective of the Bridge Millennial generation. We talk about culture, media, mental health, and society. We're kicking this episode part two off with our red light district.
What's up, y'all? Let's get nasty. So, you know, if you listen to our last episode, and again, if you did not listen to the last episode, listen to that one before you listen to this one. Follow Rob's instructions or he's coming for your ass. Okay. But we talked a little bit about India's new line for men, some things for their prostate. And I actually found some really interesting information regarding prostate cancer and our sex segment. So let's go ahead and jump into the red light district.
I want to be touched and feel it so much because everybody needs some good.
So today for the red light district, we are going to continue our self-care theme and we're going to talk about masturbation. Yeah. We're going to go there today. So first of all, I wanted to just get into some really crazy facts that I did not know about masturbation. Now, I don't know who I would have to explain this to,
I'm sorry, time out. Y'all didn't see Shannon's eyes. He gave the mean cut across.
But I'm going to just for shits and giggles, I'm just going to say, if you're listening to this and you don't know what it is, masturbation is the act of pleasuring yourself sexually. Okay. And I'm just going to say, I'm a huge masturbation advocate, but masturbation has a huge stigma attached to it. And that has a lot to do with like how history has treated masturbation. Like it literally used to be like an offense punishable by death in some places, like in the 17th century, in the 16th century. So that's actually one of the things that one of the crazy facts about masturbation that I wanted to share. But there are, you know, a couple of cool things that we can talk about masturbation. So first of all, International Masturbation Month is in May. Did y'all know that there's an International Masturbation Month and it's May. M for May, M for masturbation. Okay. So in May, go ahead and get yourself ready for a little what we like to call a private party.
I'm calling out of work all May.
Let's motherfucking go. Busy.
Listen.
Masturbation May is going down. But the thing about masturbation is that not only is it pleasurable, but it's actually healthy for you. And if you did not know, masturbation decreases the chances of prostate cancer in males. So that's one of the fun facts that you didn't know about masturbation. It also prevents cervical infections in women. And for both, it reduces depressions because, of course, it releases endorphins, those really euphoric, those happy hormones, endorphins, oxytocin, and they can even strengthen your immune system. So y'all, masturbation is actually good for you because I know a lot of people out there who still feel embarrassed, whether they maybe grew up in a certain religion that looked down on masturbation. I know that a couple of religions like prohibit masturbation. There's a lot of guilt that comes along with it, but it is a very natural and beautiful thing. And also in women, it's a natural way to ease menstrual cramps, and it lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes. Did y'all know that?
Okay. Wow. I know whenever I'm on my period is when I am the most.
Get real horny. Yeah. We get real horny. That's the same thing for me. I actually get extremely horny on my period. And it's a natural thing. But, you know, if you're having intense menstrual cramps, it can actually help those hormones that are released help with those cervical contractions that you're feeling. So another crazy fun fact about masturbation is, did you know at least 1,000 people die each year trying to choke themselves during masturbation? It's called autoerotic asphyxiation. So 1,000 people die trying to choke themselves, trying to get off. All right. So y'all just be careful with that. All right. Also in men, y'all got to be careful because you can break your penis from too much masturbation. Now, there are no bones in the penis, but I think it's like the fissures in the penis act like bones. Like they look like if you fracture them, they look just like a fractured bone. And so your penis can be like given 90 degree angle, like it can break. So please be careful. Yes, please be careful. Don't overdo it. I know a lot of people who masturbate a lot feel like they're addicted to masturbation. And if that's the thing, because you can be addicted to anything that you do too much. But I think with masturbation, it is important. But I think that if you're prone to addiction, you have to give yourself parameters. You know, I'm going to do it on Fridays. You know, I'm going to take myself on a date and I'm going to give myself a sexy bath or a sexy shower, and it's going to go down. So just make sure that if you are masturbating, that you make it a special occasion for yourself. You know, I think it's really important to, like, you know, love yourself like you would want to be loved by somebody else, or like you would want to give love. I have a couple more facts here that I think are absolutely insane. So I did want to share and get you guys' opinion on some of this. First of all, did y'all know that graham crackers were invented to treat and prevent masturbation?
What?
Graham crackers.
Is the cinnamon stopping it?
I don't
That's
know.
That's a good question.
Like, I don't know what the y'all, because they used to think, because masturbation used to be considered a disease. It was considered a disease, an ailment that you are afflicted with. So people were coming up with like different remedies. John Kellogg, the person who made fucking cornflakes. Mr. Kellogg.
Not flakes.
Mr. Kellogg. Let me tell you about Dr. John Kellogg and his sadist ass. So he's the inventor of cornflakes, and he published a whole bunch of books on anti-masturbation. He believed that red meat increased sexual desire and advocated the consumption of his cornflakes to prevent masturbation. I kid you not. He also, a couple of different things other than eating cornflakes, he would sew the foreskins of young boys with silver wire so they wouldn't masturbate. He proposed in some of these books to burn women's clitorises with carbolic acid. He also pumped several of his patients' anuses with yogurt using his enema machine. So this guy was a fucking psychopath, you guys. And
it's not making sense.
That doesn't make sense, but he was doing all of this as preventative measures for masturbation. It sounds fucking crazy, but in 17th century Connecticut, you could get the death penalty for masturbating, y'all. Penalty.
Why is he using all these foods? Like, what does yogurt and the anus have to do with it? He was really just messing with these people.
That's what I'm saying.
And if he knew correctly, red meat is actually why a lot of men can't get up after a certain age because of what they're eating.
I think what he was going for. I think he was trying to eliminate the sensation of arousal.
Yes.
Because they
yes,
say that they say, like, I'm thinking with the clitoris being a center of arousal, foreskin is also significantly more arousal. And yeah. then the yogurt is acts like a probiotic. So I imagine saturating the prostate with it is probably like a numbness, but that's also going to develop affection, but it'll reduce that. So I'm wondering if that's where he was going with it.
That actually makes a lot of sense, but just know that there was some crazy shit going on. There were a lot of
period.
There were a lot of different advocates. Like, on the other hand, there were like people like Mark Twain. There was a woman, this was like in 1972, there was a Black woman who came out. I feel like I cannot remember what her position was, but she was like in Congress or something, and she came out as an advocate for masturbation, and she wanted to include masturbation in sex education and felt like the kids should be taught about it, and she definitely got fired. So we have come a long way with masturbation. So you all, that's not the vibe anymore. We're pro masturbation. So what I want to suggest to you all is, you know, go get you some toys. All right. Because toys, you know, the innovations right now are amazing. We're in the future. Okay. So you don't have to just use your 10 digits anymore, ladies, gentlemen. You don't just have to use, you know, your favorite hand. Okay. There are, and 53% of women use toys.
I don't remember the last time I masturbated with just my hand.
Yeah, and
I feel like it's been a toy world for most of the time. Like,
my toy was dead. I did like last week.
I know, that's right. Yeah.
Nah, I keep the chargers on deck. I keep the chargers on deck because I can't, you know, and I actually, so I want to give you guys some places that you, if you don't know where to start with, like your toy exploration. Right. Yeah, your journey. If you don't know where to start on your toy journey, the first website that I got toys from is called Adam and Eve. They have toys for everybody and they have everything under the sun. So adamandeve.com is an option. Also, one of the places that I got into recently, and that's via another podcast called Cocktails Dirty Discussions. Shout out to Kiki and Medina. They are affiliated with Dame Products, and Dame Products are really cool because Dame Products are giving you like a very pocket size, travel size options that I really like, because, you know, when you're trying to, especially if you're involving somebody else, when you're trying to go on a trip, if you're trying to go to the boo house, you're not trying to pack a whole bunch of bulky shit. So check out Dame Products. They have a lot of cool things. There are a lot of powerful things that they have. And then there are like some starter things as well. And don't be ashamed, y'all. Make it special for yourself. Masturbation is a form of self-care, okay?
Yes. I was definitely one of those people at first, like, I can't do it. How do you even turn it on? Oh my gosh!
Wow.
I actually never tried it until I was like, I had to be like between 19 and 20.
Really?
Wow. Let me tell y'all, and I tried it for the first time in my car.
ain't no shame in the game.
I know, right.
I've done it everywhere.
Like, I was nannying at the time, so like I had to stay, like they wanted to go on a date, so I got off and I like had to stay late, so I stayed in the area. I was sitting in my car and I'm like, well, let's give it a try.
I know that's right.
But I really was one of those people, like, I don't know how people do that. Like, yeah. How does it even work? How can you turn yourself on? But yeah. Listen.
Unfortunately, boys masturbate at a very young age. I feel like it's so insignificant because we do so much of it once we discover what we can possibly do. Like, it's like a video game. Like, I really don't even remember. It just turns out of control. Like, if you have a boy, by the time they are 11 or 12, toilet paper is going to become a bill in your house.
he's already be like, yep. It tickles. And I'd be like, please don't tickle. Like,
yeah, toilet paper is about to become a bill in your house. So, yeah, but I think that I was definitely nervous about trying toys. But I think that's because there's not a lot of like education out there on what types of toys and what different ways you can stimulate a penis. So I like started out with like small, like little vibrators. And I was like, what am I going to do with this? And then you just start experimenting, putting it on this part, putting it on that part. And you just learn things. There's actually a whole entire, I don't know if I should give y'all this information. There's a whole, no, it's not even, fleshlights are go. But so for a lot of guys don't realize that there are vibrational orgasms that you can have. So everybody knows like the penetration, the stroking, the in and out, but you can just stimulate the part of the penis called the frenulum. And it's like the underside of the head, and adding just pulsating stimulation right there can trigger like the craziest orgasm.
The frenulum, it looks like a little T-bone. Yeah. Like a little T-bone under the head. So, y'all. And find Lilo, your frenulum.
Actually, Lilo actually makes a toy called the F1, and they adopted the vibrational technology that they put in the women's vibrator, but it's not a shaking, it's like a tapping type of vibration. So I bought that toy. I did not have a great experience with it, but I think I've already kind of experienced that orgasm before. So it wasn't like a new thing, but I think for guys that's never experienced that type of orgasm, that would be a thing. But
I know guys who feel like stimulating their frenulum tickles for them, and they'll be like, oh, it tickles.
It does tickle at first. Like, I think a lot of things tickle at first. Like, if you think about your first time having sex, like probably the first time somebody kissed your neck tickles somebody, yeah. First times, you know, but once you know what's going on,
it's a mindset.
It's a whole
it's a mindset. It really is.
So there's that. For guys, there's also prostate stimulators, which are anal toys, if that is what you're into. Okay. I do know that the prostate is, I don't know for experience, because I haven't had good experience with prostate toys. I don't like them. But I will say, like, stimulating the actual prostate itself, it can be like an explosive orgasm. Or if it's like stimulated while you're dealing with your junk, that can also intensify orgasm. I don't like prostate toys. I don't like that in and out situation. Blessed be to anybody that is getting backdoor traffic. Shout out to them. I will never, like, I tried it and I was like, I'll never do this again. It's just not worth it. I don't know how amazing the prostate must feel, but I personally feel like you got to go through some discomfort before you get to that point.
You have to be drunk as hell.
So I'm not.
The back door.
You have to be drunk.
Do you? I don't know. It wasn't.
You have to be really relaxed. You have to be really relaxed.
You have to be relaxed, yeah. But you also need to be drunk.
But, you know, for me, like the backdoor simulation, that's something that's like, that's not something I prefer, but yeah. If it's gonna go down,
yeah,
it needs to be. I need to have stimulation from all sides. Like, I need to also be stimulated, like clitorally, because it's kind of like a distraction.
I was about to say that it's a distraction. You don't focus on it.
Yeah.
See, you know? I don't like stuff that requires a distraction. Like, I don't, unless it was the most amazing sensation. Like, okay, but I feel like the frenulum orgasm is pretty intense as it is. But there are some people, it really depends on where you feel your libido and where you feel your sexual energy. Some people get aroused in the back door. That's where the first and most exciting pleasure is. And everything else is second to that. You know, some people get super aroused on their nipples and their genitals are second to that. So it really just depends on where you are. And you got to know yourself. If you're with somebody, you got no partner. But the most important thing is you cannot be ashamed at exploring your own sexuality and your own body. At the end of the day, this is you time. It's not even something that other people have to know about, but it is worth it for you to explore your own sexuality. I feel like a lot of guys feel uncomfortable sharing that, but you don't got to share it. You don't just buy the shit and just play around with it. I think it's worth it. You only gonna live once, and if that's something that you're curious about or you want to experiment with, try it. The worst thing that can happen is that you don't like it. And then don't do it again, you know?
They are starting to share it. So, unfortunately, right now, I'm on a dating app called Hinge. And you guys, this guy messaged me, and he's like, before our conversation continues, did you read my profile? Now, I did read his profile, but, you know, I didn't really think anything.
He wanted you to eat the booty like groceries?
The first thing that he, like, tells about himself is that he likes pegging and not to judge him. And, you know, I didn't pay it any mind. And, like, he
unmatched you need to know.
He did unmatch me, like, once I was like, oh, like, I didn't even really pay that no mind when I was reading.
Yeah, there are.
But I'm like, for him reality. To just put it out there, like,
they're putting it out there now. But yeah. Also, there's more. There's the idea of men, particularly Black men, becoming more fluid sexually is becoming slow and slowly accepted. So there are more women that are compatible with men who want different alternative types of sexual experiences, which is cool.
I mean, I'm fucking down for that shit because I just feel like the one thing that I always believed is that what you want sexually is your business as far as like, I'm never going to judge you for something that, you know, turns you on because I feel like just as individual as we all are, you know, as far as aesthetically, we're all individuals, personality wise, the same thing goes for sex. So if you like get pegged, homie, like more power to you. I think that it's so courageous to be able to say that.
Yeah. And
because I think it's important to
let it be known.
Let it be known and advocate for what you want. Because if you don't advocate for what you want, you're never going to get it.
I think
there's somebody for everybody. Like there's women out there that is really down for it. So we don't live in a world where you have to be like, oh, well, this is what I like. I'm never going to be with somebody or it's just only something for me. You can actually share your kinks and your fetishes and your differences sexually with your partner because they might be with it. You know what I mean? And there's also so many different ways. I am an advocate for toys. I think toys is an excellent addition to the bedroom. It does more than just experiments and makes it more playful. It also provides a certain barrier for people that are a little bit not ready to be there emotionally with you. So it provides that barrier where we can still be in this place of pleasure, but maybe not connected in a way that we're not ready to be connected in. Yeah. So I think there's so many different benefits and the type of stimulation you like can be found in like five different types of toys. So there's something for everyone. I'm pretty sure if I was really like into the prostate situation, I didn't like the in and out type of thing. There's probably something that can, I've seen inflatables. Like there's something out there for everybody.
You have slapping toys.
What? Slapping toys, you say? I'm sure they do. I've seen the ones that go on the wheel and they go.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have thrusting toys. They have
everything. Actually, I have a vibrator / dildo that thrusts. I'm going to say that penetrative toys are not my favorite, but I experiment with everything. I'm going to give a recommendation for you out there, ladies. The Satisfier, anything from the Satisfier brand, it has like a suction hole. So it feels like somebody is like eating you out, but like in a really, really powerful and great way.
Oh wow.
So anything I have
a noise.
I'm jealous. Yeah. That stuff don't be that cool. Don't let me it doesn't work for everybody. I feel like for a vagina, it's like you are layering the toy on there, but you're like layering the toy there. But for penises, they have to go inside of something. And everybody has a different shape. Everybody has a different girth. Everyone has a different length. So unfortunately, all toys are not going to work the same for everyone. You have to kind of find what works. And I think it makes it a little bit more difficult for guys. But the toy world is starting to like tape up.
I actually heard you guys would have better like sensitivity or enjoy it more if you still had your foreskin, if you were circumcised.
Yeah, definitely. So I am actually not circumcised.
Oh, good.
I'm not. I thought about it. I was like, okay, when I turn like 25, I'm going to get it. But
I heard it's painful.
Well, duh. It's
like snipping. As an adult, it's extremely painful.
No, yeah.
I don't know how to explain this. I feel like anybody that knows, they knows. I started re-experiencing new sensations sexually as I got older. Like, it was like sex for the first time all over again. Like, I feel like every couple of years I become a virgin again, and something is like, what the fuck is this? How was I not knowing about this? So I can't imagine having a penis that's not as sensitive. But there are, they do say medically there are some benefits in terms of like hygiene and things like that. I don't know that that should be an issue. You should be keeping yourself clean. If you are non-circumcised, you need to be cleaning. If you are circumcised, you need to be cleaning. Nooks and crannies need to be cleaned. That is not any nook or cranny. Women too. It needs to be clean. Well, women are a little bit different because you guys have a body system that kind of. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend a frequency of cleaning because you don't want to throw. You have pH things to worry about.
Self clean.
Yeah,
it's a cat. That's why they call it a cat.
Guys, dicks don't self clean. They require maintenance. Get under the balls, the taint. Y'all got to start. Booty got to get cleaned. All of that. So. Yeah, if you are not clean, then yeah, you're going to fester bacteria. And I don't even want to begin to think about what festered bacteria might be like behind a foreskin. But I think that's kind of why it gets a bad rep. But it does not have to be like that. Just be clean. You find a soap that works and make it happen, Captain. We are sweaty. We are musty as fuck. We are sweaty as fuck and we're musty as fuck. Like,
ew.
I can't speak for women. But I can speak for dudes. We are nasty as fuck. And when we stink, we stink. If your underarms smell bad, best believe behind them balls.
It smells like the pits.
Y'all need to be out there manscaping because a lot of your pubic hair retains that bacteria tangled up, which kind of propels that odor. I know some people, and if you like the hair, you need to be shampooing and conditioning. Get it together. Don't BS, because I always think about like, the quality of genitals you want presented to you should be equal to the quality of genitals you are presenting to the world. If you are putting raviolis, last week's raviolis on the table, don't expect filet mignon. No, you're going to get SpaghettiOs. So if you want good quality, you want the right to be able to say, I want good hygienic sex, you need to provide good hygienic sex, because that's going to set the tone. For somebody that is not really super hygienic, if you are super hygienic, they will feel insecure being with you intimately, because it'll make them feel like they're not hygienic enough. But if you are just musty and you with a musty partner, and they'd be like, oh, he musty too, we musty together, the musty brothers, then ain't nobody going to think about nothing. Like, so you just have to make sure that you got to set that tone of what you want in terms of hygiene. And that means keeping clean top to bottom.
Let's be honest. Y'all need to do your research, because a lot of men and women don't know exactly what to clean their genitals with. So let's be honest about that. Powders and baby powders and shit like that.
No. Ever Eve stuff.
Absolutely not. Not the Summer's Eve. Like, that's not what we're on right now. In 2022, y'all need to go ahead and do your research and revamp your information, because there are a lot of like bad habits that people have, especially like, I feel like maybe from their childhood or whatever, that are out here causing people to have bacterial infections. It's causing yeast infections in women. I actually was online and
yeast infections in men too.
And in men, and I was watching online. There was some comedian that had a joke, and he had some type of joke about having sex with a woman, and you know, a woman that he was with, and you know, he was telling her that she stank, and she was telling him it was because he threw her pH balance off. And I just thought it was a funny conversation, because I feel like it's extremely real. A lot of dudes don't know the things that they're doing to throw off the pH balance of a woman, yet they will go around and talk about the odor of a woman, you know what I mean? And they say, oh, it needs to be clean, it needs to smell like water. That's like actually not how vaginas are supposed to smell. So it's just like, you know, get your facts straight before you go out there spreading, you know, false information, alternative facts.
Well, I strongly
water doesn't have a smell, but stuff like that. When I see and hear on the internet, dudes be like, it need to smell like water, it need to taste like water, like stuff like that. It's like
discharging your underwear, like discharge is natural,
it's normal. normal. It's normal, and it has to do with where you are in your cycle. It's healthy. It would be weird if you didn't have any. But there are a lot of things that people are still not educated about. And in 2022, that's not cute, y'all. So educate yourselves. Educate yourselves before you're out there doing, because a lot of people, you know, for years we've been having sex and don't even know what the fuck. I'm going to say to
now we don't know what the fuck.
We don't know. People, it's just like talking about shit that you don't know about. Why are you doing something that you don't know about? You know, so make sure you educate yourself before you're out here doing this shit. And I just want to say, y'all, I have never in my life seen an uncircumcised penis in person. And I really want to have that experience, but I feel like I will be shocked, because I'm the type of person who, I feel like 1989 was like the year where circumcision just became the norm for everybody. And it actually, like, research will show that that's when it started to become a lot more frequent. And I usually date people who were like almost my exact age, like give or take a couple years. So I think that's just probably why I haven't like come in contact with an uncircumcised penis.
Most of my partners be like, a lot of my partners be like, they haven't. But what's interesting is that
a lot of
You experience it, I feel like, I don't know why, but my partners really like it. They just, I don't know why, but I'll joke about like getting like circumcised. They'd be like, no. And I think it's because, I don't know, but I think that circumcised penises tend to be a little bit more callous. The skin is a little bit more tough, probably. Whereas you really get like virgin skin, like it's more fleshier and more like, it feels like more satisfying. So people just really like performing on uncircumcised situations.
I feel like God put it there for a reason. Like, why would he?
I know that's right.
For it to be cut off.
It's protection. Honestly. I don't, also don't understand. Like,
they just want y'all foreskin for like stem cells and all that crap. But it's actually stem
cells. You probably right too.
That's why they don't want,
because why else? Why
their placenta? They like, oh, don't take it. It's just bloody. But literally every animal and mammal would, like, this female eats their placenta after they give birth. We was the only ones that didn't ingest it. But it's a Netflix special that talks about circumcision. I watched it. That's how I actually learned about that thing y'all was talking about. I learned how to do some tricks.
Yeah. That's another thing too. If you're circumcised, you won't experience that flagellum type of, you won't experience it, because they have to slip that nerve. So that nerve is equivalent to a clitoris. Like, that part of the penis is equivalent to a clitoris. When you cut it, it's like it would basically be like a woman like having no feeling in her clitoris. That's basically what the circumstance would be.
Well, it's still a little spat there, because I messed with it after I learned about it from that documentary.
It's still there.
It's still there. You just have to like touch it yourself. Like, the guy like explained like how he can make himself come like 30 times back to back. Now listen, he recorded it and showed it in a movie theater so people can see how easy it is for men that circumcised to come so like have multiple orgasms back to back.
Multiple orgasms is a benefit of.
And I just took that knowledge and ran with it, because I'm like, oh,
I can't
say that, but I'll use it for the uncircumcised ones.
Listen, I'm telling you, like, I've gotten great Yelp reviews. I've gotten good reviews on Yelp. So I don't know why it's common for this circumcision thing, but I'm glad that I made the decision not to do that when I had the opportunity to, because my sex life is just so much more amazing and my partners are more satisfied. So
I'm trying to find out. So
if you are not circumcised, please holler at Shana Ashleya. Thank you.
Please. She's
taking applications for Uncut.
Thank you.
Friends.
Taking uncut applications. I'm just trying to see what's up. You know, I like a little variety, so let's go. But okay, y'all, we got real spicy right there.
Showed it. put all our business out there. This needs to be a bonus episode.
Like I was doing it in the car for the first time.
Right. People know about my dick now. Like, this is just a lot of information.
That it is a lot. But you know what? I think that sex is a beautiful thing. I want to erase the stigma of talking about it. And I'm right there with you. But Indy, I was a little bit different because I started early. I'm a special case. I started masturbating at a very early age. I happened upon it and I was like, it's going down, and it went down all the time. If you have the urge, just succumb to the urge, you guys. It's okay. It's beautiful.
Now, I didn't start masturbating early, but thinking about it, from dry humping, I found that spot early. And thinking
that
about
counts.
It, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I don't want to say having like a full orgasm from doing it, but like, I'm like, I was doing some things.
Dry humping counts. I think dry humping counts if you get an orgasm for that. I mean, because you know, yeah, no, I have too. Like when I was younger, I was doing all types of shit. We're not gonna get exclusive, but as far as with myself, I was experimenting a lot with myself at a very young age, and just trying to figure shit out. And the first time I had an orgasm, I was like, "Well, what is happening right now?"
You wasn't scared.
No, I wasn't scared. I was just like, oh my God, the vibration.
Terrified. I was like, what the fuck?
I always felt bad. And then when I had, like, when I finally lost my virginity, I was like, oh my gosh, all that time, that was what was happening.
First of all, you had an orgasm when you lost your virginity. You lucky.
No, but I'm just saying, like, after I lost that, I mean, like, after I started having sex, no. It wasn't that kind of
girl.
It hurt, like it wasn't bad, but it just wasn't like an orgasm happened.
Nah, when I lost my virginity, I lost my virginity to a virgin. We lost it to each other.
Oh,
so
that's good.
We did not know. That was cute. He was my first love. Shout out to him. Yeah, we lost it to each other. And then the second person I had sex with was also a virgin. So it took me a minute to find somebody who really knew like what they were doing. And I feel like in your 20s, when you're having sex in your late teens and your 20s, like, I mean, people quote unquote know a little something, but a lot of people don't know exactly what they're doing. It's all like a big ass experiment anyway. So.
Yeah, you need lived experience. Just like anything in life, you got to have some lived experience to take it to the next level. But there is nothing wrong with being a virgin or inexperienced. I think that you can have an excellent, exciting sex life even with that. Some of that I do believe is, I don't want to say mental, but I think your approach to sex says a lot, because just having experience doesn't make you a good sex partner. I think your approach to sex and how far you're willing to explore, because sex is an exploration at the end of the day. It's a very explorative space that you're holding with somebody. It's physical, it's stimulating, but it is explorative. And when it becomes more explorative than physical, I think that's where good sex comes from. But you don't realize that when you're younger, because you be on a mission and you think that sex, the point of sex is to have an orgasm, and that's what we're on a race to have. But as you get older and you learn to take your time with things and to appreciate different things, and that comes with maturity in life, you tend to have better sex in general.
Yeah, I'm going to tack on to that, like being really intuitive and detail oriented, really trying to. And that's why I just feel like sex with somebody, you know, is just better, because they can really like tune into your body, and knowing your body is really important. They know your reactions to things, like they'll know when something is wrong. Like, I mean, it's great to talk about these things, obviously, first. Consent is extremely important as well. But I think that, you know, when you are exploring and doing these different things in the bedroom, I think it's important to pay attention. Pay attention to, you know, what you like. Like, for me, the best partners are people who are like you know, hey, but I noticed your face when we were doing this, you know, and I noticed your reaction when we were doing that. And sometimes for me, I might not even realize that it's something that I really liked until, you know, somebody who knows me is like, hey, but the way you reacted to this, like, really think about this. This is something you're clearly into. So I just think it's really important out there, you guys, whether you're having casual sex or sex with a longtime partner, to like pay attention to their responses, their body responses. Like, that's important. And taking it back to masturbation, knowing what you like. Sometimes you have to experiment with yourself first before you go and experiment with somebody else. Because if you don't know how to pleasure yourself, then how in the world can you tell somebody else how to do it? We'll leave the red light district right there. That was a really fun conversation. We definitely got personal.
We got personal.
The wine, y'all.
We gotta have to save some of that for a bonus content, because I don't think they should be getting that for free. They don't deserve it.
But you know what? This is what I think. I think that our listeners are an exclusive club. And I believe that if you are taking the time out to tune in to us, y'all can be a part of the club. We ain't exclusive like that yet. We're not on Patreon. We're not in the pearly gates of Patreon just yet, y'all. So y'all can get this content. But please know, eventually we are going to lock this content up.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to have to, you know, subscribe to the Patreon, but right now it's the homie hangout, and it's free for y'all. So come in, let us know some of your stories. We are looking for some things to put on the show. You guys can be featured on the show, so let us know some of your funny sex stories. We would actually love to hear those. And we're going to jump into our next segment with Rob.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
Okay, guys, let's talk mental health and society. I'm excited. This is actually some information and a conversation I've wanted to have for a really long time. Today, I want to just kind of go over and kind of debunk a lot of the myths that we have about mental health. I think that our prejudice towards mental health is one of the reasons why we don't get our mental health taken care of. And we have a lot of narratives that promote bad understanding of these things. So I have some very key concepts that I want to break down. And then I'm going to open the floor for a little bit of discussion to kind of attack some more information. I'm going to give you a quick disclaimer, though. If you feel like you may be struggling with mental illness, you need to consult a doctor. It's not for you to go online and do your own research. You need to have active conversations about the symptoms that you're having with a professional specialist that is able to analyze that. The reason why is because the presence of mental illness is different in everyone. Two people can have the same diagnosis, but they look very differently. And one of the problems with mental health is that there's sometimes overdiagnosing happening instead of like taking things on an individual cases. Okay. So let's start it off with some definitions. You know, on here on the bridge, we love a good definition. Okay. We're going to give you the definition. You're going to learn today. Starting off with anxiety. One of the biggest misconceptions about anxiety is that it's just nervousness. You just have nerves. When people say that they deal with anxiety, we sometimes downplay it. Like, what do you have to be anxious about, or what just happened? While being nervous may be a small form of anxiousness, in the mental health community, anxiety is typically related to sensations of panic, sometimes impending doom. And people who struggle with anxiety disorders may experience what's called dissociation, which we'll talk a little bit about later, panic attacks and seizures, even fainting, nervous system malfunctions, even heart attacks or cardiac arrest. We call anxiety the silent killer because it can trigger such a wide variety of severe illnesses, including other mental health disorders. So anxiety is also generally understood to be the source of most mental illness, is a form of anxiety or a stressor, as they call it. On depression is not sadness. I think that we use that term very loosely to describe sadness or feeling down. Depression is not sadness. It's a sensation of overwhelming numbness, and hopelessness. And oftentimes that space is very mind-altering, which means that it changes your reality. People are not depressed because they're sad. They're sad because they're depressed. And you can also be depressed without being sad. Actually, they nicknamed that a smiling depression, when you're just kind of not experiencing that sadness, but you still experience the numbness and hopelessness of the depression. There is a lot of different levels of depression, including clinical depression, which is when it becomes a lot more chemical. It's not just a mood or a psychological thing. It indicates that there's actually an imbalance in your hormones in your brain or your neurotransmitters. Moving on, there's mania. So mania, we kind of know as like euphoria. When we think of mania, we typically think like the Joker or Harley Quinn. Those are periods of very heightened arousal, impulsivity, and often elated mood, followed by racing thoughts and lowered inhibitions. So most people who experience manic episodes are actually unaware that they're going through manic episodes. They just feel really, really good and really, really positive. It usually requires like some loved ones or some friends to bring attention to the change in their behavior. Because although a lot of people may feel mania is like a great feeling, it is also an imbalance, and it is something that can be dangerous, because when you lower your inhibitions and you're super impulsive, you tend to not be able to sense when things are dangerous or not realize how other people are being affected by your actions. Okay. Moving down is a big one, psychosis. This is the big thing that everybody is afraid of. They're afraid of when people say going crazy or losing my mind or going insane, people are thinking of being in a space of psychosis. This is a very highly, high, when I tell you high, it is very highly sensitive, altered reality. It's usually driven by paranoia and or hallucinations. This is often described as like psychotic breaks or moments of temporary insanity. However, there is no limit on how long a psychotic episode can last. You can go to sleep in a psychotic episode and wake up in a psychotic episode. If you have a tendency to repeat psychosis or have prolonged psychosis or revisit your psychosis, then you're probably dealing with an underdiagnosed disorder and you need to seek help immediately. Now, I say all of these things. I know psychosis sounds like the scariest thing. The truth of the matter is that a lot of people probably experience it and don't realize it. Nothing pertaining to mental illness is going to spin out of your control. Although these are scary spaces that and scary things that your mind does, your mind is doing a lot of things in the background all of the time. So I truly believe that you're not going to be handed more than you can handle, because the presentation of the mental illness comes from you. It's just one of the things that your mind is doing. So don't feel like if you may be diagnosed or you may be experiencing that the world is over. That's not the case. People can experience all of these things and live perfectly happy and fine and functioning life with maintaining therapy, sometimes a combination of therapy and medications. That leads me into the big one that everyone loves throwing around, bipolar. I don't know about y'all, but that became a slang. I remember growing up and just hearing, oh, you're bipolar. And usually we use it in regards to someone that is indecisive or having mood swings. However, bipolar disorder, formerly known as manic depressive disorder, is categorized by ongoing cycles of mania and depression. So we just talked about mania. We talked about depression. Someone that is struggling with bipolar disorder is experiencing cycles of those two things, meaning that there's a chunk of time where they are completely manic. And I'm not talking about hours. I'm talking about days on end, sometimes weeks, sometimes even months. And then there is another chunk of time where they are completely depressed. So bipolar is typically going to be categorized in two types. There's type one and type two. Type two is considered more mild, so you'll experience them as more elevated mood and depressed mood versus a full-on mania depression cycle. The last little tidbit is multiple personality disorder. In psychology, we call that the holy grail of psychology. The reason being is because there aren't really many documented cases of multiple personalities. I don't know where this came from. It seemed like it was sparked more as a rumor because there really aren't any like evidence of anyone actually having multiple personalities. But for the sake of clinical studies, that disorder has been captured in what's called dissociative identity disorder, with the understanding that if there was someone to evolve into multiple personalities, the source of it would be multiple different dissociative identities. And I like that because it puts it on more of a spectrum of things that you might be dealing with. And that's also something a lot of people are afraid of. Again, people who struggle with dissociative identity, they can deal with that. There are some honorable mentions that I'm not going to go into detail about. If you guys want to hear more about it, we can do a separate show about it. But I do want to do an honorable mention on schizophrenia. I know that especially during the early 80s, that was also a slang term that was thrown around as well. And that was also the biggest fear, particularly in the Black community, that addressing mental illness would either uncover schizophrenia within your family or the treatment will trigger you into schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is not something that is typically just diagnosed as easily. It needs to be observed. There's a very specific criteria that needs to be observed by a specific level of practitioner, and they're looking for very specific markers in a very controlled amount of time. And there's also an age range, there's different levels, there's schizophreniform. That's a whole entire course on its own. The bottom line is that you not confronting a possible mental illness doesn't mean you don't struggle with it. You would want to know what you're dealing with so that you know how to handle it. The understanding that you are dealing with mental illness, that's not enough to like change your whole world. What that is going to be is it's going to teach you how to craft your life to get the best out of your life. And before we open up the discussion real quick, I do want to just touch on medications. I'm not advocating or disadvocating for medications, but I do want to responsibly explain a little bit of the types of medications and how they work, if this is a path that you want to, you choose to go on. So there are antidepressants, which are also anti-anxieties. That's the same medication. It just balances your neurotransmitter. So if you think of like a dam where water is flowing in and out, antidepressant kind of just reinforces the dam and makes sure that things are flowing out when they're supposed to and things are coming in when they're supposed to in terms of your neurotransmitters. A little bit more aggressive than that is a mood stabilizer. Mood stabilizer actually decrease abnormal brain activity. So this would be something I would guess maybe in that same analogy, instead of fortifying the dam, maybe you are adding a filtration system to the water itself. And then antipsychotics will alter the effect of the chemical in the brain. So it'll change the way you experience those chemicals. So in addition to maybe adding a filtration system, think about like when you shock a pool or maybe you put chlorine in the pool. It's definitely altering the makeup of it. At the end of the day, these medications are prescribed on a very strict basis and they're monitored on a very strict basis. It's not likely that you're just going to be given a medication that you do not need. And the aggressive approaches come a lot later. The first lines of defense being your antidepressants and your mood stabilizers, those are always going to be preferred. Any doctor is going to want you to have a plan of decreasing your medication regimen. So don't think that they're like, oh, I'm going to put you on a medication, you're going to stay on it forever. No, the plan is always that you decrease that regimen and increase the therapy until you find a therapeutic space where you feel comfortable with. So do not feel shy about speaking to your doctor about mental illness. Don't get overwhelmed by these titles and stuff like this. In any medical community, they will tell you the only significance of a title and a diagnosis is so that when you get handed to a new provider, they know where to start. But you being a human experience, you just need to know what you're experiencing and how to experience life better. Medications on all fronts manage symptoms. They don't erase or there's no medication, whether it's asthma, whether it is heart disease, whether it is whatever it is, diabetes. There are medications that will medicate the symptoms, but it will not erase everything. So don't think that these medications are like mind-alteringly strong. Certainly the mental illness that you're struggling with without being treated is far stronger than what a medication is going to do. And an untreated mental illness is going to do significantly more damage than what a medication would do. So I just wanted to put that out there and open up that discussion. I know that was a big chunk, but I wanted to just kind of like get it out just in, you know, this, the fairness of responsibility.
So my question would be, what would you do, or what do you do? Because I've been through this before. When there's somebody in your life that you feel like may have a mental illness, how do you present that to somebody? Because I feel like there's no good way to do that.
And yeah, also, I actually just went through this. Somebody just asked me that same question before we got on this episode. That's wild.
Yeah, and also it's like, I'm not a doctor, but I got Google. I can Google shit. And there have been times where, also like retroactively, like there have been people that I've dated that retroactively, like once I get away from the situation, I'm like, wait a minute. Some of these things don't really make sense, don't add up, you know, and then I'll do a little research and I'm like, damn, this person might actually, you know, be suffering from a mental illness. So how do you, what would be like the best way to, or maybe you just don't present that to somebody, like, I don't know, what do you do?
Well, that's a really good question. You definitely want to take some sort of action. So in crisis management, we have like these three principles of potentially violent situations. It's called target, trigger, weapon. So you want to, the best that you can, eliminate those three things. It's not up to you necessarily to diagnose this person, but in any situation related to crisis or mental illness, you want to be vigilant of target, trigger, weapon. What seems to be a target for this person, and can we remove that target or remove the person? What seems to be a trigger for this person? Can we remove that trigger? What is this person using as a weapon? Can we negotiate those things? Are they using their words? Are they using their body? It's up to you as an onlooker, I guess, to do your part to make sure those things are in place first, and then to be the supportive friend. You will eventually guide this person to a space where they will be diagnosed and treated. They don't need you to be that person. What's going to get that person there is a trusting, secure relationship. People that are beginning the process of treatment or being seen for therapy, they often feel like there's this wash over them that the world is suddenly not as real as they thought it was. And then that kind of stems like a little bit of paranoia and some worries. The most important thing is to have a trusting relationship with this person. So pulling yourself out of the medical, take your medical hat off, pull yourself out of the diagnostic. It doesn't matter what this person is diagnosed with. They need you to be an unbiased person that they can go to. They need you to be their person. So if you are that for them, then be that. If you're not that for them, find this person's person. But those are the two things that I would suggest.
Okay, thank you for that. That actually makes sense, because it doesn't, for me, I'm like, I'm not about to be diagnosing anybody, but like, what can I do? So
yeah. A lot of times what we do is, like, before there was WebMD, there was Google the psychotics. Like, a lot of times what happens is, like, you'll have a friend that is struggling with something or maybe have been diagnosed with something, and your immediate thing is like, okay, well, let me look up what this disorder is and let me figure out this person. And now it's like, okay, how do I do that? How do I navigate around this? You, as an everyday person, don't even have the skills to navigate around a mental health disorder because you don't have a handle of what the nature of that disorder. So learning it is not going to help you at all. What you need to just do is be an unbiased person in this person's life. Look at them as just a person, and they have qualities and they need help with certain things. And that's it. The only thing I would suggest being vigilant is understanding target, trigger, weapon, because things can go from 0 to 100 depending on where you are, and you want to make sure that you're safe yourself, but as well trying to, the best that you can, decrease the possibility of this person damaging themselves or someone else. So
I wanted to share a few herbs that I know
with
anxiety and or like depression, just to help lift your mood. So I would suggest lemon balm, valerian, maca root, St. John's wort, chamomile, lavender are a few. But I also have a question. So like within the past maybe 2 or 3 years, I've personally had like a hand-on experience with somebody who was diagnosed with bipolar. I want to say they might have been diagnosed with something else, but also they have like an addictive personality. So my issue is I don't know how to be biased anymore. I only know how to like be mean, I guess. Well, not necessarily be mean, but be like very truthful, because it's affected them to the point where they did try to harm people, or like the police were called, or I had to drive there to like come get them, and they were going to therapy and stuff. I was even calling the doctors like, hey, they lying about this. But if the doctors don't see that, or maybe it just was like a better way for me to handle it, because I feel like the only thing that will help now is tough love. But I don't.
That's a really good question. You brought up two really important points. First of all, remember what I said about you being the human experience. You don't necessarily need to live in the label. A part of that is because you can have features of almost any like you can be depressed with psychotic features. You can be psychotic with manic features. You can be manic with depressive features. So it's not as simple as you would think. I think that for people in this scenario, like you're saying, because it is burnout, okay, you need, and when you're stepping in that role of, you're almost kind of like a care provider, not that you're providing care, but you're stepping into the role of a care type of situation. What we say in crisis management, the first thing that we learn is that the most effective tool that you have to manage a crisis is you. So we always ask ourselves, how am I feeling right now? And even in EMT school, any type of crisis, you have to ask yourself, how are you feeling? And if you're not feeling like you can deal with this, then don't deal with it. Because you're not in a space, and it's no guilt, and you don't need to feel bad about that. What's being asked of you is very taxing. A lot of times you may also experience some parallel trauma where you're feeling some of that stress. Now you're absorbing some of that. You are responsible for your own health as well. So don't ever feel guilty in feeling like you have to always be that person's person. If you're not that person, then you're not that person. In terms of if you're looking to become more sensitive, I would talk to your own personal doctor, ask your doctor to give you more information on these particular things, or tell your doctor what your experience with that person so they can help guide you with understanding a little bit more. As a blanket understanding, a very broad blanket understanding, I would say imagine someone that may be struggling with bipolar-like disorders. Imagine that you were looking through, you saw the world through a camera, and you saw it through a purple lens for like 8 months. And after that, you saw it through a red lens, and you only juggled between those two lenses. But everyone else sees the world lens free. So it's like, it's not just actions, it's not just moods, it's realities. And while you may be in the same space as someone physically, you are not in the same space with them in terms of where y'all realities are. So what you may see as like common sense, or you may see like this, just why would you do this? In your unfiltered reality, yeah, those connections happen. But someone that's dealing with mental illness, especially something that is a little bit reality altering, just like you make your logical connections without your filter, inside that purple filter, there's logic. Inside that other color filter, there's logic that takes place. So it's a matter of not understanding their experience. So just try not to compare what you would do without those filters. You know, imagine that, you know, everything that you believe to be true, you woke up one day and realized it wasn't, because that's what people that, you know, feel when they go through things like that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what happened. So apparently they might have been diagnosed as a kid, but up until adulthood, never. I mean, like, just it was never dealt with. And then now it's like a big issue.
Yes. So. And also, we people that struggle with mental illnesses, your 30s to 40s is basically where you're going to see the peak of whatever that mental illness is.
Okay.
A lot of times, unfortunately, especially people of color, when these kids are young, they get thrown these diagnoses. There's something. Having worked, I've worked in every capacity in the field of mental health, from psychiatry across the lifespan in multiple worlds. And I'm telling you, there is an inconsistency, and there is this world of people that are really silenced. And because of that, the empathy isn't always there. To diagnose, if I wanted to diagnose someone as a psychiatrist, I could either make the decision on my own. I could give this person a questionnaire. I could observe their behaviors and document. It's an invisible sickness. So there's not as much strict, it's not as much strictness as it should be. So when it comes to you being a child and me being an adult, depending on what's normal is going to be dependent on what my normal is. You know what I mean? So sometimes at young ages, these kids do get diagnosed, especially these kids of color, because, you know, our behaviors seem a little bit too rambunctious or too whatever for this person who's not accustomed to our culture or whatever the case may be. So a lot of times they do get misdiagnosed, or they'll get diagnosed at a young age and not treated and followed through. So it's not very uncommon. I definitely say if you're a person that has a child that may be struggling with mental illness, I say yes, go get the person treatment, but get 2 to 3 different opinions. I don't care even if it's obvious, always go to get 3 or 4 different opinions and make sure that everything is lining up, just because there's a lot of error that takes place there. I'll just leave it at that. But make sure that things line up. If you're a Black person, find you a Black doctor, find you a Black psychiatrist. There are psychiatric nurse practitioners that can diagnose. Do your homework on what your resources are. Go to school. See what these other kids with these diagnoses behave like. Learn. But speak to so many different people, because it can get easy to find yourself in that one-track mindset, because people are tracking you, putting you in this to go in this system, to go in that system. And the next thing you know, kids grow really quick in 2 years. And you like, how did my kid get in this whole situation? So definitely more than one opinion.
So what you're saying right now basically is that because the Bridge Millennial generation right now, we are in our 30s, this is probably a time that we're going to see an influx of maybe some type of mental illnesses in the people around us.
Absolutely. It's not a coincidence that mental health is a trend. I think remembering that our generation, we invented this viral information type of wave. So anything that is a wave, it is a reflection of us. So yeah, we're now in our 30s and we're now going to experience the brute force of the things that we experienced in our younger age. And we've already talked about our generation. One thing is that we were born to be small adults. We were born with adult expectations. We had our lives already mapped out for us. That does bring on some depression. It may bring on some neuroticism. It may bring on some narcissism. It may bring on so many different things. But yes, within these next couple of, I would say 10 years or so, we're going to definitely see an influx. And with the added isolation of the pandemic, it's going to hit. So I think it's very on brand and on point that the field of mental health is so widely talked about, and there are so many different tools now because they're going to be very much needed.
Does it only show up so late because it wasn't dealt with as children, or?
No. So the mental illnesses that become full blown. Not all of them are going to be, you can probably see them in different places, but anytime there's an illness, mental illness related to age, it usually has a lot to do with the brain development. And your brain has just developed in a certain way by your 30s, you know. I find in my professional experience, I think children have a capacity of what can be processed and what can be compartmentalized, which is why I think trauma at a young age just becomes a little bit more integrated in who you are, because from a perspective of defense mechanisms, if we assume that every mental illness was a defense mechanism for something, your brain has developed these modes of operations to cope with something that you can't deal with. So we have suppressed memories, but maybe your fidgetiness is related to something you can't deal with. So over time, untreated mental illness is essentially mental illness that hasn't been dealt with. But they dealt with or not, within a certain time period, being your adulthood, that is typically where you're going to see the mental illness develop the most. I think it's a part because of your brain development, but I also think it's the time where you start seeing yourself differently. You transition from the child to the adult. You transition from the person at the bar hanging out to the adult sitting in the house. You transition, you start to see yourself differently. In your 30s is when, you know, you might unfortunately start losing people in your life. Your whole world might change. You may have faced things like financial stress. You may have faced abuse. You may have faced abandonment. You're going to reface these woes of the world. And I think at a certain point, it's kind of like, some of it is just kind of like it's like that push over the edge.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because right now we're like, what is life? Mm-hmm. You know, we're here. Is this the Matrix? Is anything real?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're all questioning what the hell is going on right now anyway. And with the Panda Express just refusing to end, it's really important that we take care of our mental health and that, you know, we are just paying attention. We're paying attention because sometimes, you know, I feel like when you are suffering from a mental illness, it's hard for you. Like you said, it's hard for you to tell yourself, you know, so it's important for us to also check up on your friends, y'all. Check up on your friends right now. I say that it's so important because we get so caught up in our own lives and our own perspectives and, you know, the things that we're complaining about, the things that we're going through, you know, sometimes that shit is chump change compared to what somebody else might be going through. And so I want to say right now, y'all, check up on your friends, check up on your family, check up on the people that you love. You absolutely never know what somebody is dealing with. There's no way of you knowing, especially if you don't check up on them. And like Rob said, like if you are that person's person, be open, be sensitive. It's so important because right now we're losing a lot of lives. We're losing a lot of lives to suicide. Some of this can be prevented.
Absolutely. And also I'll add to that, if you love somebody, tell them that you love them. I'm going to tell you how, I can't even begin to explain how powerful it is for someone who's struggling with mental illness to know that A, they're loved and that they have somebody out there. That is very impactful. And you would think that it's really common, but you would be surprised how many friends you have right now that don't hear those words often. You would be surprised. And it's usually your strong friends. Check on your strong friends, but you'd be surprised. I think that there's this really dangerous recipe when it comes to mental illness, adding that isolation onto it. That's not going to be a good recipe in any situation. The mind is going to do things that the mind doesn't need to do. if you love somebody, you telling somebody that you love them frequently can really save them from mental illness. It can save their life. Say it. It's something. And unfortunately, us within our Black community as well, a lot of us come from broken homes where affection is not normal. So we are uncomfortable saying that we love someone. It feels weird. It feels awkward, but you got to say that. Text that person, call that person, check on that person, because those things can make a humongous difference. I used to work in suicide prevention for years, and you would be surprised how many kids are feeling like no one acknowledges their existence. No one thinks about them. They're nobody's everything. So that means they're nobody. So make sure you say these things and let people know that you care about them, because that can be like that's your biggest tool right there, no matter what. Especially if you think somebody's going through something, you just find a way to show them some love. Be like, yo, let's go get an ice cream cone, like differently. Like, let's go get some Now and Laters. Let's go get the pink pack of the Starburst. Like, do something, because the world can't just be dark. It can't just be dark. But when you deal with mental illness, you don't realize that because you don't see anything else. So for people that's outside of that see something else, bring that light into somebody's world. It'll make a difference.
And I want to say also, those people who seem like they bring a lot of light to other people, they also need light. You know, a lot of people who are extremely loving, a lot of people who give that light to other people, don't save a lot of it for themselves. And it can get really dark in their world. So not only people who you feel like might be going through things, but anybody, like, I am super quick to be like on the phone with somebody and we get off the phone, I'll be like, all right, love you. Like, you know, just because I think that it's really important to share that love is there. And like you said, in the Black community, that's not something that we feel comfortable with. We don't feel comfortable being vulnerable like that. Because, you know, somebody might be like, that's weird. You know, she's always saying she loves me. She's a stalker. He's a stalker.
Like, my best friend, y'all got me over here like diagnosing my best friend, because she doesn't like take like, I love you, or like, I'm glad we're friends. And you mean like, she just be like, she'll wait till like the end of the day or the next day to reply to me. And I'm like, girl, I texted you earlier, like, I loved you. But it's just like, maybe I need to ask her, does she hear it a lot?
Yeah. So the reason why that is something that's very prominent in Black communities is because the giving and receiving of affection is learned in what's called attachment theory. It has a lot to do with the prenatal, neonatal, and infant stages of affection. It has a lot to do with the family bonds and things like that. When you look at the history of the Black family, we were torn and divided. That's one thing. We have to learn how to love each other on that intimate. It's sad to say, but a lot of us don't have that innate instinct anymore because we didn't evolve it. But then there's also things like poverty. Like, how many moms are not with their infants because they got to work? How many single parents are out there? How many people don't have that bond with a male figure because their father has been in jail? Or how many people are dealing with like violence from their own family, or feeling unsafe for seeing a violent situation that they was born into? Then there's the drug epidemic. Then there's crack epidemic. So there's a lot of infiltrated things that break up the natural ability for us to show that type of stuff. So we don't get the dose of it that we necessarily need. A lot of times we're born, and I've said this before, we're born like 100-gallon tank. We can handle 100 gallons of love, but we're born with parents that can only give 5 gallons of love because that's the max of their tank. So we are at that disadvantage. It follows, just like we at that socioeconomic disadvantage, we're at that intimacy disadvantage as well, which is why it becomes really difficult for us as adults to give that affection. And then what? It's just going to become a cycle, you know?
Yeah, Black men can't tell each other that they love each other a lot of times, you know. I feel like there are so many things that our community needs, but I do feel like at the heart of it is love. And so tell your people you love them. Don't be ashamed. Don't be afraid. I think that, you know, the alternative would be that you don't get a chance to say that. And, you know, it could be too late. So, and you don't want to have that regret, you all. So just share love, spread love.
Spread it. If it's awkward, tell your homies you love them. Be like, I love you.
Hey, ayo, ayo, dog.
I love you.
I love you, my nigga.
Like, I've gotten comfortable with, like, showing love to my friends, even my guy friends. Like, I've gotten comfortable with it because it came a point in my life where I just was like, this ain't normal, y'all. And just doing what I've done for a living, it's not worth it. I've come across like thousands of people who will never hear that genuinely. Like, I've genuinely, because all they've known is like foster care and child care and stuff like that. And the closest family they have is me. And they're like, I can't tell you I love you at work. That's inappropriate for me to say that to a child. But you know, it's one of those situations. You would be surprised how healing and therapeutic love itself is. That's like the biggest medicine. It's the end all be. I really believe that there's places in like tribes and stuff like that where they use love as a punishment for crime. Like there's tribes in Africa where if they have somebody that's like committing a lot of crime and stuff like that, they'll put them in a circle and the community will surround them and just like tell them how much they love that person and just give them compliments and all of that stuff. And eventually that person kind of, you know, breaks down in tears and kind of have like a renewal process. You'd be surprised. We were not put on this earth to be disconnected. That's not who we are. We were put here to love and learn to love more, learn to love better, and eventually connect. That's what we're here for. So give that love. Send an emoji. I love sending emojis and gifts. It makes my guy friends feel awkward, my straight guy friends, but I don't care. I'm gonna send it anyway. If y'all want to know, there's this emergency, go to the gifts and type in emergency hug, cute ass emergency hug gift. It's like this big person that breaks in. This big, I think he's a black dude, but he's like big and he just breaks in with like a ski mask and stuff and does this flip and just hugs this like individual and stuff like that. It's the cutest thing ever. It's a little pig. He just be hugging a little pig. It's the cutest thing ever. I'm infamous for that. I will send emergency hugs out randomly. So
period. Spread love, spread hugs. If you didn't know, actually, like, affection heals wounds faster. Cuddling heals wounds faster. So this is not just like some bullshit, like, you know, mm-hmm. kumbaya. This is actually like real. Spread love. Tell your homie you love them. Like, find a way to express that. I think it's extremely important. And I just want to say that I love all of y'all. Because
I love y'all too.
I love all of y'all. And you know, like you said, it's about connection and that whole thing about self-love. You love yourself so that you can love other people, but it's also that you can see yourself in other people. So once you love yourself, you'll be able to love anybody, because the whole point of human connection is seeing that we're all more
we're alike. One.
We're one. We're more one. Alike than we are different.
Yes.
You know?
That
everybody's DNA is like 99.9% the same, y'all.
For yeah, real. That's
Black,
the truth.
White,
that
is the truth. Asian.
We are more alike than we are different. We always have been. But we unfortunately live in worlds and societies that divide us and want us to focus more on that. But that love and that affection is very important. Did you know that an infant, if it goes a certain amount of days after being born without skin contact, it can die?
That's wild.
I did know that.
You knew that? Yeah. So, and that is a part of that skin to skin contact does. That's their first jump start to their immune system. The skin to skin contact does what breastfeeding may do before the breastfeeding takes place. So, yeah, it's very, very real. But
it will have your baby crying and your boobs will be tingling and they ain't nowhere near each other.
Yeah.
Why do you know? Like, girl, we
yes, yes. There's something magical about life. And I think when we started living to gain, oh my God, I feel like I'm reciting my essay, girl. You gotta watch this. But when we started living to gain instead of living to live, like, we started downplaying the magic elements about life and we started disregarding them as not important and reclassifying what it means to be a strong person or a person in general. But it goes there, y'all. Just let it go. Because at the end of the day, what you leaving with? Come on. Like, it is what it is. Love yourself. And as I've said before, you got to love you. Now, what I won't say,
What you not gonna say?
What I'm not gonna say, loving someone else should not take from the love that you have for yourself. Now, I say spread love, but know what's for you and what's for somebody else. Do not set yourself on fire trying to keep somebody warm. Because sometimes love is meant to be had from over there. Everybody don't need to be right here, because there are some destructive people out there that are detrimental to your physical, emotional, and psychological well-being. So I'm not saying you got to love you first. But like Shan said, loving you allows you to love things that look like you, that sound like you, that feel like you, that think like you. Loving you allows you to love other life. Love that. But don't blindfully go into a situation where being close to someone forces you to be further away from yourself. That's a dead sign that that ain't the situation. That is not the situation. It's not at all. That is not the cereal and milk that we're going to sip on this morning. That's not that.
And it's all good, because you don't have to be with anybody, because like we said, masturbation is new. It's innovative, you guys. They got some new toys.
Once a day keeps the stress away.
Right. Hello? We got masturbation. No, masturbate with Shannon's recommendations and get Please. The tinctures. Masturbate while you got the tinctures. Is there any herbs that are natural aphrodisiacs?
Mm. Oh, maca root is a really good one. That's what I sell. Maca root, sea moss. Gets that libido up.
They lied. Let me tell you why they lied about this damn sea. Dr. Sebi, oh, get you some sea moss. Left eye. Oh, sea moss changed my life. Just Rob's world. Let me go get me some sea moss. I got this sea moss gel. That shit tastes like new sneakers.
Okay,
it tastes like new. I was swallowing.
It is nasty.
Good, Rob.
I thought it was okay. I was taking tablespoons of it. Like, wah. It tastes like new sneakers and Vaseline. That's what it tastes like.
Put it in a smoothie. Put like a flavor,
maybe put some honey on it or something. But also, I got like a really big jar. It expires. It goes bad. So don't buy a huge jar, because you're not going to consume it unless you're doing like, I could see smoothies and stuff, like if you getting busy with them. But I got this big jar, and after a while, it started smelling from new sneakers and Vaseline to old sneakers and Vaseline. I was like, oh.
It should last. Like,
and it started getting gray. Uh-uh. It wasn't. It didn't give what it gave.
Also, y'all have to be careful, since sea moss is in such high demand. It's a lot of fake sea moss coming out. Like, man-made. Like, it's not sand on it. It's you thinking it's sand. It's salt. Like, they are making it. Like, they're making it now. So you have to be careful about who you're getting it from. Make sure it's like always.
No.
Yeah.
Let me find out. Rob got some fake ass sea moss.
Because
I was like, wait, it's not supposed to like go bad.
It goes bad, and it started getting gray.
It's from the sea.
Well, they dry it. They take the sea moss and out the sea, and they dry it out, and then turn it into whatever they're going to turn it into.
It should at least give you like a good 3 months. A good no, good it should last a good month. Sorry, not three.
It
months.
Gave a month. It gave a month. Okay, it gave.
I'm
a
about
month.
To say.
I just was doing. I had like a whole jar of it, and I was doing a teaspoon of it a day. But it wasn't a day, because I don't have a blender yet. Shout out to anybody that want to send me a blender.
Pull a teaspoon. Up. I feel like you're supposed to be more than that.
Right,
I feel like
exactly.
You're supposed to be more than a teaspoon, but that's exactly why. Because my first little experience with sea moss, I was like, this shit nasty. But then More Life got popping. Right.
Come
in the
on, More Life.
Right in the beginning of the pandemic, and India was offering capsules, and those were easy for me, because I'm like, well, I don't have to taste it.
Yeah. So I would just dry it out. I would dry the sea moss out and then turn it into powder to just stick it in the capsules, because a lot of people did complain the taste was nasty.
Yeah. Okay.
I
already bookmarked it. If y'all didn't hop on this website by now, y'all sleeping. I don't know what y'all got going on, but India got it popping. Okay. This website is Official Tissue. It got little leaves and stuff, little honeycombs and stuff, little blueberries. I want to just lick the screen. Like, everything just looks really good.
It's good. I'm trying to convince India to start doing juices again. I know it stresses her out, but the juices was popping.
Actually, I really do want to do it again. It's just about finding like a good, I'm going to need like a good commercial blender. You know, I was using, I mean, juicer. I was using my own personal ones, but I'm going to have to get like
an industrial one of the things I want to like learn how to make smokable herb blends. I already be, let me tell y'all about these damn herbs. I told Shannon I was goofy one day. Like, I'll be goofy. So what I do is I do the Egyptian rose hips. I do, not chamomile. I smoked that. That was disgusting.
Okay.
But lavender is really nice, and peppermint for the like flavor. If sometimes I have really bad migraines or I can't sleep. And this is not something I think to do frequently. But when it's time and that headache hit, it's like, oh, I just remembered I got the situation covered like a bandage. I go up in there, dun, 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 smoke that. Yo, I be like, good night. There's no headache. There's no conversation. Okay. There's relaxation. And that's what's going on. So I want to learn more about dried herbs and how to make smokable blends.
DM me, call me. I don't remember what the mix was. I bought a mix from another girl because I was trying to switch out from like using funnel, which worked really well. But also once while I was breastfeeding, I tried to smoke chamomile. It did relax me. It didn't get me like high or nothing.
I ain't like the taste.
Maybe I just needed like the motion of feeling like I was smoking, but it relaxed me.
Well, also when you're pregnant, you have cravings too. So the taste probably was popping for you. Like,
no, I was done. I was like almost done breastfeeding.
Oh, got you.
Because I didn't want to mess with my milk.
I know, that's right. Get the milk. I
want to take a chance.
Yeah. Okay. Chamomile, it comes as buds and I couldn't grind it because it's like pillowy. It was a problem and a half.
Okay, well, we need to get on smoke. Now we do love herb. We do love smoking the greenest of the green, but also let's get on smoking some of these other herbs and rolling up like some things that are going to relax you.
Yeah.
Some things that are going to do some other things for you. Like, we have options now. There's a whole bunch of options right now. I'm actually trying out this CBD for sleep right now. So I will give you guys kind of like it hasn't really worked like just yet, but I also feel like this particular weekend, there's sometimes when my brain just doesn't want me to sleep because I'm going through a lot, but I'm going to keep at it. And I think there's like a formula as far as like how frequently you eat before or after it's, that kind of like just makes it a little bit more potent or not. So more on that later. But we are out of time for today's episode. I want to thank India for coming on. Thank you so much. This was really fun.
Yes.
Thank you for having me. I had a lot of fun. I'm always nervous, but you guys kept me cool.
Nah, it's chilling. This is like the homie spot. This is the homie hangout. You're always welcome back. Y'all go to India's website. Plug your website one more time for them.
www.morelife.love.
All right, get on there, y'all, because that's some of that shit be selling out. So make sure that you go ahead and hop on it. Don't put it off. I am Shannon Ashlea. You can find me on Instagram at Shannon_Ashlea.
Word up. I am Rob. You can find me on Instagram, just Rob's World.
We're on Instagram as The Bridge Millennial Podcast, and we're on Twitter as The Glitch Homie. So come talk to us, you guys. Listen to the episode. Tell us what you think. It was so fun having another Glitch Homie on, and we will see y'all next time.
Later. Peace.